Isavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena chaktena bhunjita magridha kasya svidhanam. Very important verse. Prabhupada speaks of this as the Isavasya principle throughout the whole Ishopanishad. So the first verse, the first mantra is setting the tone for everything else. The Isavasya spirit is to recognize that there is an Isha, or a controller of everything. Here's the translation. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So, artificial renunciation would be to give everything up that is meant for you. Proper renunciation is you accept those things that are meant for you and you don't accept other things. The renunciation is other than what you require, you don't become attached to it or try to become the proprietor and owner and the enjoyer of. And even that which is set aside as your quota, it doesn't mean now you're entitled to, like a child in a sandbox, just play with whatever you're entitled to. Rather, those things that you're entitled to are meant for your well-being, upkeep, and maintenance, for the mission of life. So it's a problem if you don't know what the mission of life is. And I was just hearing a lecture yesterday. Prabhupada was saying 99.9% of the population today do not know the purpose of life. They don't even inquire about the purpose of life, or they accept something else as the purpose of life. And it's not really the purpose of life. So that's then renunciation. The spirit of renunciation is that from this verse, recognize who the proprietor is. And the proprietor is that from which everything comes. That's pretty logical. If everything comes from one source and the proprietor is that source, whatever that source is. Now you may want to discover what that source is. That's a good question. But the principle is whatever is the source, that's the proprietor. Again, back to the political ideologies. The laborer thinks I made this table or chair or furniture, so it belongs to me because I did it. It's mine. And that's material consciousness. I did it, so it's mine. The spiritual conception is Krishna is the source. He's the ability. He's the ingredients. He's the intelligence. He's the material. He gives me the capacity to make, so it belongs to him and I'm serving him. That's the spiritual conception. The proper renunciation is it belongs to him and I offer it to him. And I may use it in service to him, to my capacity, according to my nature, and so forth. That's proper renunciation. That leads into the second verse we're going to discuss. So let's do it one more time. Proper renunciation requires knowing the purpose of life. The purpose of life is fill in the blank. So if you're a follower of Bhagavad Gita, then you know the purpose of life is, you can say either to know yourself, but to know yourself includes knowing your relationship with the source of everything, because that's part, you're not just a twinkling star in the sky. You're part of something that's much greater. You're part of the Supreme Whole. You're part of the Supreme Whole. That's part of a fuller understanding of knowing who you are. And so in part of that the complete whole, you have a relationship with that complete whole. And the mission of life is to restore that forgotten relationship, or to again be situated in your relationship with the Supreme, to please Krishna. That's the mission of life. And to realize that in its fullest capacity, that's the mission of life. There's so many other things that connect to that. You're eating and you're working and you're studying and you're this thing and that thing, the things that you do in your life. They're connected to that same one thing. Knowing who you are in your relationship with the source of all things, Krishna. That's the mission of life. To come to that realization, to come to restore that consciousness. And then proper renunciation is to connect with things of this world in that spirit, the Isabhasya spirit. That's proper renunciation. Then it's not your property. You're just accepting it and using it in service to that mission of life. And proper renunciation is other things I don't require. So naturally that builds character, charity, compassion, care for others. These are qualities in mode of goodness. So proper renunciation is in the mode of goodness. And improper renunciation, well, you take the guess what the other two modes of nature are, and that's improper renunciation. Influenced by ignorance, I forget who I am, and I just use things for destructive purposes, or I use things for sense gratificatory purposes. So take your pick, ignorance or passion, that's improper utilization or just tossing them away. Out of born of frustration. That's improper renunciation, where the purpose of life is not being pursued. Frustration, getting free from frustration, maybe is being pursued. So now we'll go to the other verse that this your handout should have. We have some extra ones here for in the room if you want some. So you can say with me, this is the proper renunciation. Anasaktasya vishayan yattarham upayunjataha nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya uchate. We'll say the improper one second, but let's just stay with this one. Anasaktasya vishayan. It's a nice beginning. We know one of the stages of bhakti is called asakti. Asakti means attachment. And its opposite is anasaktakti. Anasaktasya, without attachment. Anasaktasya, without attachment. And without attachment to what? Vishaya. Vishaya is a word found in Bhagavad Gita. It means sense enjoyment, without attachment to sense enjoyment. So that cuts out a lot of things, at least the interacting with things in the mode of sense enjoyment. That's the main material program, sense enjoyment. So, but without attachment to sense enjoyment doesn't mean you don't engage your senses in objects, but without attachment to sense enjoyment. Anasaktasya vishayan. Then comes the next phrase. Very interesting. Yatarham upayunjitaha. If you look down in the word for word, yatarham. according to suitability. So according to suitability, upayunjitaha, you engage in the objects of the senses, or you accept things. This is proper renunciation, is to not have attachment to sense enjoyment, while at the same time, according to suitability, you accept things. So I want to spend some time with the according to suitability term. It's really intriguing. So many of you know that one of Prabhupada's disciples is the grandson of Henry Ford. And Henry Ford was a wealthy man. And Henry Ford passed on his earnings, his wealth, to the next generation and then the next generation. So Ambarish Prabhu was born into wealth. So he certainly has the karma to entitle him to be born into that wealth, but he has great wealth. And he knows how to use that wealth. He's using that wealth in such a way that he's rendering service to his spiritual master. He's a very humble man. I don't know if anyone has met him or had interaction with him, but as elevated he is in terms of material society by name and wealth, he's a very humble man and very genuine. So he doesn't, I've been to his home. He doesn't have a fancy home. He has a very simple one-story home in Florida. And when his mother died, she had a summer home in Maine, so because it's really hot in Florida in the summer, in the summer he goes to Maine and stays in his mother's now deceased summer home, and then he goes back to Florida. And that's it. He doesn't flaunt his money or fool around with his money. He's, according to suitability, he has great wealth and he's using it appropriately. And then there's somebody else that doesn't have great wealth and somebody else is in between. So we accept things that are suitable for us. Now naturally those suitable things come your way. Whether it's, poverty or moderate financial status of life or very luxurious status of life. But you only, whatever it may be, you only accept things that are necessary for maintain yourself and your business, your family and your activities. The idea is keep things simple. This is our Vaishnava life. So according to what's suitable, he may have something greater, someone else may have something lesser, but according to suitability. And according to suitability has a little interesting flavor. It is, as you're moving along the path of life, rather than trying to accumulate more, the devotees of Krishna are always seeing, maybe I don't need all these things. I just give some things away or just do without some things because I really don't need so many things. It's according to what you need. And someone mentioned this. So with that, the topic of sustainability. So, like a little example of sustainability. Today's Ekadasi. Is it an Ekadasi in Texas also, right? Damodar today's Ekadasi. Tomorrow is Ekadasi in China. That's why I'm asking. So, you know, different time zones, it's different. So, but we're in the same central time zone. So on Ekadasi, there's different standards for fasting. Correct? Like the other day there was Radhastami and someone sitting in the room with us was asking, how come we don't have a full day fast on Radhastami? So we certainly can. It's encouraged in Hari Bhakti Vilas, but Prabhupada made it very simple. We have a half day fast. and have a nice feast for Radharani. But if one doesn't have the nice feast for Radharani at midday and you have a full day fast, literally it means from sunrise to the next morning sunrise. That's how the Hari Bhakti Vilas describes fasting. So for some people, that's a piece of cake. Some people, that's like intimidating. Or so then you can maybe just, that there are different degrees of fasting. You can just take water. Or you can just take fruits. Or you can just take non-grains. Or you can, so there are degrees of fasting. You can fast for half a day. That's something that, given, you know, an active traveling lifestyle that I've had for so long, that seemed very practical. Although there was a time when less travel and it was a full day fast. Every Ekadasi was a near Jal Ekadasi, every Ekadasi. It was really nice. But so there were a group of us doing like that, and there was one younger devotee, I won't mention his name, and he was trying to imitate. And he couldn't handle it. We found him passed out in the walk-in refrigerator in the temple. He had just like offered everything in their walk-in refrigerator and was stuffing his face and passed out in the refrigerator. That was artificial. It wasn't sustainable kind of renunciation or austerity. It's something that's sustainable, that point was made. So that's similar to yatarham. Yata arham. What is suitable for you may not be suitable for another person, and it can go the other direction. What's suitable for you may be insufficient for another person. So it's very flexible. And the deciding factor is, one of the big deciding factors is what's sustainable for you. And then what may work, you know, when you're 20 years old may not be the same as when you're 30 years old, may be the same as when you're 80 years old. So, or, you know, children, you know, there isn't the expectation that they fast on Radharani's appearance day if they take prasadam. But if they're happy, then they can, it's sustainable, they can also fast on those festival days. So that's this yatarham, according to suitability. And you know, ultimately it comes back again to the mission of life or your relationship with Krishna. Krishna knows what's suitable. And if you, the more you get tuned into your relationship with Krishna, you know what's suitable. And not, you know, manipulate things for convenience. It's the mission of life. There's a purpose for renunciation, detaching oneself from sense objects. But then, detaching from the mood of sense enjoyment, you accept. Like, you know, there's two large couches in the room where we're seated. And, you know, different persons have different furniture in their homes or different paraphernalia in their kitchen. So anyway, this is according to suitability thing. There was some devotees I know, they really like to have things really simple. And when they invited some guests over to their home, they got the sense from their guests that you people are like, you're artificial renouncers. You're like Spartan-like. And so they got some furniture just so they could put guests that come to visit them. They would feel more at home. But it wasn't because they just wanted comfortable furniture. Anyway, you get the idea. For the mission of life, that's what's suitable, according to suitability and according to your needs. So you can be peaceful and you can go forward with your devotional service without unnecessary anxiety. So yatarham upayunjitaha, then nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. So I don't know a lot of Sanskrit words, but I know the Sambandha word. I know the Krishna word too. So Krishna Sambandha means things that are in relation with Krishna. Nirbandha, Krishna Sambandhe. Nirbandha, without bondage, what's the bondage? The bondage is trying to be the enjoyer of the objects. So without the enjoyer of the objects mentality, or this anasaktasya, without attachment to sense gratification, nirbandha, Krishna Sambandhe, yuktam vairagya uchate. Those who are accustomed to listening to Prabhupada's lectures, you know this phrase, yukta vairagya. It's a principle that he would say the whole thing just by that one thing. Yukta vairagya. Vairagya means detachment, and yukta means to utilize. By utilizing things in that spirit, there's detachment. That's proper renunciation. So let's do it one more time, the proper renunciation principle. And then we'll do the improper one, and then we'll see if there's some discussion. So, anasaktasya vishayan means without attachment to enjoying objects with your senses, you yatarham upayunjitaha, you accept things, objects of the senses, bring them in contact with the senses, engaging with them, nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, not in this bondage spirit because there's not attachment to them, you're recognizing Krishna Sambandha. That goes back to the Ishopanishad verse, Isavasya verse. They belong to Krishna. So Krishna Sambandha, yukta vairagya. You achieve proper vairagya or renunciation, detachment, by using things. Engage your senses, engage objects of the senses in Krishna's service. That's the proper principle of renunciation. Improper? You ready? Here we go. Prapancha kataya bodhya hari sambandhi vastuna mumukshubi parityago vairagyam palgu katyate. Again, Prabhupada would use the same phrase, palgu vairagya. Palgu vairagya, false renunciation. So improper renunciation is hari sambandha, those things that are in relation to hari, you give them up. But they're not yours to give up. If they're not used to give up, then it's false renunciation or improper renunciation. I was noticing when we were, last few days we visited in Schaumburg. I was just looking out the window seeing every third car was a Mercedes or a BMW. Did you notice? I mean, most places I visit, it's, you know, Hondas and Toyotas. But in Schaumburg, it's at least every third car. And the ones that aren't are, you know, some other expensive car. Not, I mean, anyway, so some places, there's, I don't know, there's greater affluence and people use their affluence in that way. Get a more expensive, prestigious label car. And there are a few of the other Jaguars and the other kind. So, is that something that for a devotee, it's not like shame on somebody that has a Mercedes or BMW, but is that what you require? And I've seen some devotees that buy those cars, and after a little while of purification, they realize, I don't really need this. And just, you know, get something that's practical and simple and get you from point A to point B. That's what's needed. So the attachment is not necessarily to the object. It can be a subtle kind of attachment, that the attachment of prestige or position or recognition or other more subtle kinds of attachment. I was having a discussion today with someone that they were struggling a little bit, just being honest with me, they were struggling a little bit with being unappreciated for services that weren't up front, but services that were a little kind of behind the scenes, kind of quiet services. And they were expecting some recognition. And it wasn't coming, so they were a little like irritated. Or worse. Let's explore that a little bit. Supposing somebody has a need, at least they feel. They have the need for being acknowledged or being recognized for something. Supposing that's their condition. Now what are they supposed to do? Just on this renunciation principle. Like tuck it under the rug, because that's not cool. You're not supposed to be like pushing yourself forward to get recognition. When other people do that, I don't feel comfortable, so I don't want to do that myself, although I feel the need for at least some recognition. You know, that's, in one sense, it's a human quality. So what do you do? Go talk to a friend and say, you know, help. I've got this, you know, the short term is one thing. The long term is to know that Krishna is recognizing. That's the mission of life. If Krishna is recognizing, that's sufficient. And I know that when I see persons pushing themselves forward simply because here's a situation where I'll get more honor or more this or that, I don't want to be like that. You know, I'm not going to, they are who they are, but I'm not going to be like that. So then, that's also an antidote to that, that if there is that condition, the tendency, the human condition, wanting some kind of recognition from others, at least important others, then what do I do? So you have your relationship with Krishna, and you know that Krishna is the one who is recognizing every little thing, the bad things too, and the good things too. Krishna's got a big notebook. And he's noting everything, the good and the bad and the mixed. And so what's important, a long-term solution, a permanent solution, is to just strive to act in your relationship with Krishna, and then you'll find satisfaction. So, this example of the Mercedes and BMW. Supposing I'm walking around in Schaumburg, and I say, I renounce it. I renounce this car and that car and the other car, and I'm quite detached. But it's not mine to renounce. If I can just recognize that everything belongs to Krishna, proper renunciation is recognize everything belongs, this Isabhasyam, everything belongs to Krishna, here in a nice little house. There's, you know, little family with few children and this and that. So it's, you know, it belongs to Krishna. And so we utilize it in Krishna's service, and we dedicate ourselves and whatever happens in the house to Krishna's service. And that's proper renunciation. It's not attachment. It's, nor is it false renunciation. It's proper renunciation. Now, I don't have a house. It would be something very strange if I had a house. I don't. But it's not like, a householder needs a house. It would be artificial if the householder says, something else. I can have a house. I'm not even going to rent one. I'm just going to, I don't know what, live under a tree. But you can't stay in Chicago and live under a tree, even if you're renounced. Got a house. So you utilize things in Krishna service. That's proper renunciation rather than the artificial kind. So one thing I want to end with and see if there's some discussion. It's something that I have kind of consistent experience with. When young people, doesn't matter, you know, what their ethnic background is, when young people start to take an interest in Krishna consciousness, something starts to happen about their interest in school and academics. It's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Doesn't have meaning for me, and like, check out. So it's too much attachment on this side and too much detachment on that side, without seeing the purpose of that education. And it's the purpose changes when spiritual conceptions of life start to form or take precedent. The purpose of involving oneself in the educational process is, it's not just so that I can have a living on the other side of the education, although that's there. We have to function. There are, just like I didn't complete my education, but the training that I received, I mean, I didn't become a medical doctor. I mean, I completed my undergraduate college education, but I haven't, I didn't go into the working world. I just went straight into a Hare Krishna temple. But that discipline that I gained is still with me, and the faculties that were developed, et cetera, are still with me, and I'm using them in Krishna's service. And it suits me. No, somebody else may, something else may, they have a different psychophysical nature, and it suits them. But I'm just going back to this. It may have no practical application to anybody who's there in Houston listening to this class. Maybe it does have some relevance. Or you run into somebody that has this thing that happens to them when they start to practice Krishna consciousness. They lose interest in their academic penchants or tendencies. There's a holistic approach to Krishna consciousness, that we use things in Krishna service. Just the purpose has to change. Instead of whatever the other purpose was, that now we have to find or rediscover the higher purpose of things. The higher purpose. So that's this mission of life message again. And when the message of the mission of life has becomes clearer, then again there's enthusiasm to do XYZ things that maybe in the material side of life, now I'm becoming less interested in the material side of life, but what's the spiritual side of life application of these things? Just today, I was just thinking of this as an example. Just today, I was watching, it's an old recording where Jonavi Harrison was at some really posh place in London putting on a concert with devotees. And they weren't in dhotis and saris. They were in Western dress. But they were in Western dress because it was practical, because of the audience. The audience was a posh London highbrow audience. And there they were standing up. They weren't sitting down on the floor. They're standing up with their musical instruments and so forth. And, performing in nice clothing. But the purpose of the nice clothing wasn't fashion show. It was purposeful and practical for the audience. We do things, we make choices, that proper renunciation choices are, you select things because it's appropriate for the service you're doing or the life circumstance that you're in. When I go to China, it's just, I was told, best if you don't even put a dhoti in your suitcase. Because there are times when they do security check of your luggage, and if they find a dhoti in your suitcase, you may spend a while in the police office, where they ask you questions about who are you, what's going on here. So that means I have to buy some other kinds of clothes. But it's not for, oh, great, now I can wear pants again. It's just practical. And then, okay, then, what kind of pants? It depends on the season. And just practical stuff. Just practical stuff. Something that can dry easily because of travel and those kind of things. So, without attachment, anasaktasya vishayan. But not the other. Hari sambandhi vastuna. Not just throwing things away because if they have relationship for Krishna and you have a service to do for Krishna, you accept things because it's practical for your service to Krishna. That's proper as opposed to false renunciation. So let's see if there's some discussion. I believe the class goes till the 8 o'clock hour. Yeah, we're going to do the online people. It's for Houston folks. So, Damodar Sharan, you have any persons there that want to offer some input?
Yes, Hare Krishna. So, if anyone would like to ask any questions for Maharaj, they can feel free to unmute yourselves and speak. Please do mute yourselves after you ask the question, in order to avoid feedback, etc.
You can also send something into the chat section and Damodar Sharan can read.
Yes, that's what it is.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
There's a phrase, eat to please yourself, dress to please others. And I guess the opposite of that would be eat to please others and dress to please yourself. The second one, the improper.
Yeah. I'm not so sure about the phrase either. Eat to please yourself. That's just the sound of it sounds like maybe the intention isn't sense gratification, but the purpose of eating is to please yourself. So, but that's not your question. Your question is, turn it around the other way. Eat to please others. and dress to please yourself? I mean, I'm a little confused by the question, frankly.
I guess what I mean is, like, devotees sometimes dress in such a way that it increases their service.
Ah.
Eating what is healthy for your service.
Well, not increase service, but, you know, at what is appropriate for service. Like this example of this concert that was performed at a highbrow place in London. So knowing the British people and knowing the highbrow mentality, they had, you know, nice clothing. It wasn't like, you know, fashion, but it was nice clothing. I don't know how they selected they orchestrated the selection of clothes for the whole group that was up there on the stage. But so it's suitable for the situation that you're in. That's dressing standard. You know, not to this and not to that. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay. I mean, I'll give an example. There was, in China, there's one girl that's a translator, and she's like a really detached person. So when she would come as a translator, even in public places, she was wearing just this kind of old T-shirt. So she did it regularly. It wasn't just occasionally. It was regular. So I had to advise her, when you're in a public place, you have to dress in such a way that the public will understand here's a respectable person, not just here's a super detached, non-fashion oriented person. We have to be sensitive to the mentality of our audience when we're in a public position, public forum. So it's not for the purpose of pleasing them, but it's just, you know, to match their sensibilities. Does that address your question? I'm not sure what your question is.
Yeah.
We're okay?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
This is Uttam Bhaktas. I have a question. When a devotee increases attachment to Krishna, naturally there is some detachment on the material side.
Yes, you got it.
So the things that I think about and I face in my life is the two things, descending versus ascending approach, and also the exploitation mentality on the material side, which is very prevalent these days. So with those things in mind, when a devotee continues the material duties, would that be considered an austerity for Krishna to continue and then dedicate yourself and your assets in Krishna's service?
I think I heard your question correctly. And if I did, the answer is yes. A consciousness is what changes, not the activity necessarily. Now, some activities, you know, we push to the side, but it's the consciousness with which you engage in the activities. Yes, there's some austerity being, for example, in a work environment where people are exploiting each other left and right. We still carry on with our duties with multiple purposes. Show here's the right standard. We're doing something that's for Krishna's pleasure, not for our pleasure. We have another purpose. So we do it with that consciousness. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else? Because we may have some questions in the room here, if there isn't some questions online.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, I'm Sucharita Devi Dasi. Guru Maharaj, the question I have is that, so I hear you say very often that one should do duties as per their nature and what suits them. Guru Maharaj, is there any way that one can arrive correctly that what is their nature or what is the kind of duties that they are supposed to take up?
You're asking in a general sense or in a personal sense?
Guru Maharaj, it is in a general sense so that I can apply it personally for myself.
In a general sense becomes in a personal sense. That's what I just heard. General means for anybody out there in the universe, and personal means for you. How am I supposed to understand anybody's prescribed duty, or how you're supposed to understand yours? Which is it?
For me to understand
what I should be doing according to my nature, so that I can serve better. Almost always, what Prabhupada writes in his books about prescribed duties is under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. Now, spiritual masters in our modern context, I mean, even with Prabhupada, I didn't have access to ask Prabhupada, can you please assess my psychophysical nature and assign to me prescribed duties that are suited to my psychophysical nature, nor the other 4,500 disciples, what to speak of those that weren't initiated, just followers. It's not realistic to expect that Prabhupada would have an individual, laser point set of instructions for each one of us. And, then following Prabhupada. So in addition to spiritual master, it's important that we have people that are guiding our lives and not in a micro managing kind of guiding, but, a principle oriented kind of guiding. And, that's one of the ways that you can help understand what your psychophysical nature is. You ask the persons that are helping to guide you in your spiritual life. And, another principle for you to understand what is your psychophysical nature is study Prabhupada's books and get a reasonable sense of what the modes of nature are, and according to the modes of nature, what propensities are. And then a third, for you to understand what your psychophysical nature is and thus your duties, do some introspection, particularly in light of the scripture, but do some introspection, step back from, the pressure of things that are expected of you by people around you, that your family and your teachers and your thises and thats and all of that. Step back and consider what is something that I can really get absorbed in, that has a practical side, and I can offer the results to Krishna side. And stay with that for some period of time. It doesn't have to be, it takes time to get clarity on that topic. There's somebody I know that they went to college, they got a degree in such and such, and they did all right in their academic study, but they really, they really weren't satisfied with the entry jobs they got in that such and such field. So they stepped back and took a look at themselves and said, you know, I think I would be very happy just doing a job that was meaningful to the people that I interacted with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they ended up doing some teaching. And then they tried this kind of and that kind of the other kind of teaching, and they found something that really suited them. So it sometimes takes a little evaluation. So a little hit and miss. And so those are three ways. Someone that guides you, scriptures that can help you identify what your nature is, and introspection. And stay with that for some time and see where you feel absorbed, energized, your skill set matches the activity, and you feel inspired to grow that skill set. Okay. Okay. We have time, I think, for one more question.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is Prakash from Singapore.
Whoa.
Maharaj, in the Isha Upanishad, verse 1, this word, Yaktena, which is translated as set apart quota. So Maharaj, I have a question on that. So this verse makes it pretty clear that one should only accept things which are set aside for his quota. Specifically, Maharaj, when it comes to services within ISKCON for Krishna's pleasure, there isn't always, you know, when you're doing the service as a team in collaboration with someone, there isn't always an authority figure around to say for everything, you know, you do this and you do this. So specifically with me, Maharaj, when there are collaborative services like that and there is something to be done, I tend to take initiative and just go ahead and do them. But sometimes I notice that tends to displease devotees I am collaborating with. Because perhaps without knowing, I have taken their quota of service. So how to deal with that?
Well, different devotees are different, and I think you just have to be sensitive to the personalities of those different devotees. You know, it's not necessary. I know you well enough to know you're not interested in taking somebody's service away from them and doing it yourself, ha, ha, ha. That's not, you know, or doing it even, you know, rather than laughing at them, saying, I took your service. You're not insensitive to others, but you service that needs to be done, you got your sleeves rolled up, and you do understand, you, I know, do understand the necessity of teamwork. And so you encourage others to do, and you also do some yourself. And if there's trust, then a person can speak up and say, excuse me, Prakash, but, you know, I really would like to do that service, something, something. So yeah, there's communication rather than feeling your toes are stepped on or feeling that you're stepping on other toes unknowingly. It's you know, relationship building in teams. You know how to do that. You do it all the time. So if someone is feeling, oh, he stepped on my toes, then, you know, another mistake is just step so far back that the service doesn't get done. My experience and hearing from others that are organizer type of persons, we'll say it over and over and over again. When it comes to projects, commonly it's, you know, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And it's not even that the other 80% do the 20%. It's something like 20% do the other 20%. And then 60% do nothing. And that's very frustrating for organizers. No, it isn't always like that, but that's common, a common experience, and it's not one group of people. It just seems to be groups of people. So one of the essentials of team building is encourage people to step forward and be ready at the same time if they don't step forward, that someone, you or someone, is ready to be the backup in case they don't step forward. Even when they say they're going to do it and then they don't do it. You know how that one goes because you've organized enough. And then you got to fill in the gaps. So that there has to be a contingency plan because that's part of human nature. People commit and they don't do. And it's an essential part of the, you know, the team effort. So it's like, you know, you're not so sure you're going to give some service to that person again because the team is depending upon something getting done. So it's relationship oriented. We want to, teams require encouraging team members. That's team activity works that way. And at the same time, there has to be a team leader. Teams without a leader end up chaos. There has to be a team leader. A team leader has to be an empowerer and also one that can see when something isn't getting done, how to get it done. And encourage people that are doing something. Anyway, it's team building. It's a nice exercise. So you're acknowledging that you're not perfect. That's good. Who's perfect? Okay. I think we're the 8 o'clock bell rang, and we're going to end on time. Dhamma Sharanan, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is Sundar Gopal online or he's not present?
I believe he is not online.
Okay. 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 Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai.